Hello, and thank you for downloading episode 46 of We Got This with Mark and Hal, recorded live this past weekend. In fact, right now, I'm sitting in a hotel lobby waiting to be picked up to go to the airport with a jacket over me so that there's not a ton of echo and you can't hear all the other people talking here. Nonetheless, this is Star Wars versus Star Trek with Adam Savage and special surprise guest John Hodgman. It's on the internet, so I'm telling you now, he will appear during this episode. Very excited to have them both. And also, our opening act was Carter Parton Rogers. And you will see in your feed a bonus episode that is her opening act from this very same show. So now, without any further ado, please enjoy episode 46 of We Got This with Mark and Hal.
Hello, I'm Hal Lublin.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
Since the dawn of humanity, one issue has gone unsettled. With the fate of the world in the balance, we're here to settle once and for all.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
That's right. Don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Podcasts should have a theme song.
Podcasts should not have a theme song.
Yes, they should.
No, they shouldn't.
They sound good.
Yeah, but people are just going to skip past it.
You know what?
You're right. We got this.
What is up, San Francisco Sketch Fest?
Did not expect this.
I did not either.
San Francisco knows how to party.
I did not even know they were here.
Unbelievable.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is We Got This with Mark and Hal. Hi, Hal.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm really happy to be in the same room with you recording this.
I know. It's very rare that usually you're in your underwear in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I'm in my underwear in New York, except on the rare occasions when we're doing a video version of our Skype chat.
And we both put on T-shirts.
So it looks like underoos.
Yeah. This podcast is just a never-ending slumber party.
We should really one day do an episode from inside a fort, like inside a pillow fort.
You know what? It's not only does that sound like fun, but it's really smart for recording because it's
just
a ton of baffling around the mics.
Yeah. Pillow fort or blanket fort. There's our topic for the episode.
Don't spoil. We can't do episodes within episodes yet.
No, okay.
My goodness.
So today is Best Religion.
Nope. No matter how many times, I know you want the answer. Did somebody just chant Catholic?
Please do not even start down this road.
Yeah.
No, we are here today to discuss a very heated and a very passionately debated topic.
Yes, very divisive. And this has been suggested multiple times by multiple people. Twitter, Facebook, email, Reddit. I think it's been suggested at least once everywhere.
Yes. Do you want to? We both did like a...
We breathed in so hard.
You ready?
I liked your breath better than mine. You go ahead. You ruined it. It's Star Wars versus Star Trek.
All right. And to talk about Star Wars versus Star Trek, we have an expert guest. And I really do say expert. And boy, does he know about these universes.
Yes.
He has, in fact, built several replica props. He has built costumes. He is, you probably know him from the television series Mythbusters. Please welcome to the stage, Mr. Adam Savage.
Thank you.
Hi, Adam.
Hello, Mark.
So what's better? no, we should set up with a criteria that we're going to use for how we're going to determine Star Trek or Star Wars as the superior product. Tell me what you guys think. I was thinking, Hal and I were talking on the way over here, it may be a good idea to look at it more generally, like the characters being one element, story being another element, but also cultural impact being an element, merchandising being an element.
Well, cultural impact also has several different elements to it. There's box office receipts.
Right.
And then there's also the culture, like how people respond to it.
Right. Does that seem like a fair way to
look? Exactly. Better than anything. Right. I'm just glad that we have a guest here who not only owns a working R2-D2, but built Captain Kirk's chair.
Yep.
Yeah. Give the crowd and the listeners your bona fides.
All right.
For this topic.
I wanted to work on Star Wars when I first saw it in 77. I was 10 years old. I eventually did work on episodes 1 and 2. Sorry about those.
What did you do on episode? What were you not? Don't say you're responsible for Jar Jar Binks.
No. I did models and sets, or what you'd call set extensions for episodes 1 and 2. So that would be they'd shoot the actors with a set built up to 8 feet, and we'd build the rest of that set.
Gotcha.
Either in miniature or various props that would go in that. So on episode 1, I actually built a spaceship, Newt and Rune. Remember the racist characterization?
You have to be more specific.
No, I don't.
Fair enough.
I built their ship, the Nemoidian shuttle, and I worked with a wonderful model maker, Larry Tan, on that. And I got to build it with him. Then I got to paint it, light it, rig it on set. Naboo set. I built the exterior of Padme's apartment. I mean, there were dozens and dozens of little bits and pieces for those films, and it was really, really fun to work on them, despite the displeasure of actually watching them. I also worked on... this is controversial. I worked on one of the best Star Trek films, which is, of course, Galaxy Quest.
He's right.
Galaxy Quest is a near perfect movie.
I totally agree.
What did you do on Galaxy Quest? Oh man, I love that film.
So Galaxy Quest is I worked on over a dozen movies, but Galaxy Quest is by far the best movie I got to work on, which is sad because I only worked on it for 2 weeks. But in the scene in which they're pulling the ship out of the dock and they scrape against the side of the dock, I built the part they scrape into.
Hey!
Adam Savage.
And we had very specific... there was... Occasionally, you needed to answer the question to other model makers. It's a very egalitarian atmosphere where you trade stuff and information. And so the question came up from somebody... I'm working on Galaxy Quest, which is based on Star Trek, but I've just finished working on Star Wars, so what's the difference aesthetically?
And right.
We had a specific answer, which was, oh, in Star Trek, you can totally have three details in a row that are all the same. Three little bumps on the side of a ship. Boop, boop, boop. In Star Trek, in Star Wars, never. Star Wars is always two, and then there's a space where there's a rusty streak where one's missing, and then one. Because in Star Trek, Star Wars, everything's falling apart. And it's been like jury-rigged and stapled back together. And you have to tell... So three or four details in a row is verboten in the Star Wars universe.
Now, is this only with the Rebels or is this with the Empire as well?
It's a good question. No,
thank
it's
you.
Really... It's across the board. Star Wars is always like this ship was built and then we built some more on top of it and then we built a little more on top of that.
Okay.
And Star Trek is like, you know, here we designed it and we built it exactly like we designed it. Enjoy it.
So the do you think that the ships from Star Trek would beat, if we went full Monitor Merrimack style, would a Star Wars ship beat a Star Trek ship, or would a Star Trek ship beat a Star Wars ship?
On this metric, I think it's Star Trek all the way.
Okay.
The Star Trek ships are incredibly powerful compared with the, and this has been covered on the web, there are plenty of resources you can find, but you know, I just remember there's a Star Trek where Worf is like, they encounter some ancient ship and Worf is like, they're shooting lasers at us. And everyone kind of snickers and tightens up their shirt and goes, I think the Star Trek people would eat Star Wars people for lunch.
Okay, so that is one metric that we didn't even mention before, is the technological firepower.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, those ships are huge. Like, the Enterprise is like a city on top of a battleship that's flying through space. I think it's bigger. Like, you know, you have those shots at the beginning of the Star Wars movie. It almost always tracks to the underneath of a Star Destroyer or some large ship, and you get this idea of scale, especially in New Hope. The Star Destroyer keeps going and going. But that's like...
And in Spaceballs, it keeps going even more and more and more.
It keeps going and going, and then it's got the those great bumper stickers.
Yeah.
On there. But the Enterprise is bigger than one of those ships, right?
I don't think the Enterprise is bigger than a Star Destroyer. It's than a Star Destroyer.
Well then. I'm going to leave.
I remember my dad was a big... Oh, by the way, do Star Trek fans prefer Trekkie or Trekker? Do we know?
I've never heard anyone say Trekker.
I read it online that someone who was a big Star Trek fan was like, Trekkie is derogatory. Like, derogatory? Like, it's like a...
It's the T word?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, he used the T word in public, in mixed company. So we can say Trekkie. My dad is a big Trekkie.
Can we say that? Yes. This isn't like...
Do we have to get bleeped? I don't know. Jesse Thorne.
This is like, told me recently you went to a Donald Trump rally.
Yeah.
It's like, you just. Heard
ironically.
Yeah.
Calm down.
You don't think he's going to make America great again?
Yeah. Because he wants to build a wall and keep all those Trekkies out of the country.
We are bordering dangerously close to important arguments, and this show is never about important arguments.
Swerve it back.
This is arguably a very important argument, Star Trek versus Star Wars. All right, so let's talk about the characters in the universes, in the Star Trek universe versus the Star Wars universe.
I'm going to weigh in here. I mean, Star Trek's depiction of alien life really is not nearly as varied as Star Wars.
It's just green paint. It's just spray painting.
Bumps on the nose. Yeah. No, I mean, they do have a couple of amazing outliers, like the beings that are based out of flesh and they call humans ugly bags of mostly water, which I think is maybe the most poetic thing that's ever been said in a science fiction show or film. Ugly bag of mostly water. But when it comes to aliens within the universes, Chewbacca wins hands down as the greatest non-human, fully realized character in history.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wookiees rule from the corner. We did, and we got to meet his entire family in the special. And I thought what's his son's name? Lumpy. Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought Lumpy had a death wish. I thought Lumpy, when he like climbed up on the thing and he's walking on the road, I couldn't tell if that was just a kid playing, or if he was like suicidal because Chewbacca wasn't home, or...
I watched the Star Wars Christmas special live as it aired.
Oh, God.
I did. And I remember Lumpy had these big puffy cheeks. And at that time, Different Strokes was on television. And my sister and I couldn't help noticing a resemblance between Lumpy and Gary Coleman. And then we had the most ludicrous argument where my sister, my 2 years younger than me, was like, it's amazing they cast Gary Coleman as a Wookiee. And even at that tender age, I was like, it's makeup. No, it's makeup. That's not actually Gary Coleman. They wouldn't hire him for his cheeks. They can make whatever cheeks they want.
I feel like at some point we're going to have to talk about the great stain that each property has. I think the holiday special definitely is, if you haven't seen it, at the first, I'd say, 10 to 15 minutes, are Chewbacca's wife, Mala, his father, Itchy, and his son, Lumpy, who are just talking to each other.
Which, by the way, are all just, they're named after medical problems.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like some weird, like, Shields and Yarnell act with growling in it.
They're in it, right?
I think they may be. I'm sorry. It's just so bad. The first time I saw it, I was sitting against a wall with a headache and tears from laughing so hard. But it's a lot of like, woo, 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 for 10 or 15 minutes. Then at a certain point, Chewbacca's father essentially space masturbates to Diane Carroll.
Spacerbates.
Yeah, spacerbates. You've got like Harvey Korman as a six-armed cook. B. Arthur
as in purple face.
Yeah.
Right?
They're all, I mean, Carrie Fisher is so high. This is at the height of her drug problem that each eye is looking in a different lateral direction. Like the TikTok crocodile popping out of the water.
But unlike that crocodile, we did not get warning that she was coming.
Yes.
By the ticking and the talking.
I also remember Harrison Ford showing up as like a video phone call briefly. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's how the cool guy does it. He doesn't come for the party. He just calls in. I was like 11 and I was like, yeah, that sounds right.
I saw this for the first time this year at this holiday season because of a friend of ours, Ken Plume, who has access to everything ever recorded and sent it to me. And I And I was watching this one morning. I'm in, I'm working a show in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina with my girlfriend, and she is in the other room, and she, and I'm watching the whole beginning of this thing, and it's just like all of the, these Wookiee noises. And she comes into the room like as well into this thing, just shaking her head. And she's like, honey, I've been trying to figure out what you were watching. And can you turn that off? Like she was viscerally upset that I would be watching this. The best thing about it is
the worst part was that you were masturbating.
I was spacesturbating.
And pre Diane Carroll. Very weird.
Yeah.
That's the only time it's okay.
The best thing about that special for me was not the special itself, but the commercials. The version I saw had all the original commercials and the news break when it's like, it does take you out of that world when you're watching Star Wars holiday special and you're seeing all this stuff in space. And then a news break comes on and it's like Brezhnev. And you're like, oh, right. There's a world that was happening when this came out. So let's get away from the Star Wars holiday special. What did you mention? The
Great Stain.
The Great Stain. What is the Great Stain on Star Trek?
For me, it's Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, in which they take a trip to the center of the universe to visit God, or Shakari, as Spock's half-brother Sybok calls it. It's an abomination.
Are you making this whole thing up from scratch?
I swear. I wish I were. I wish I was good enough to come up with something like this. And it starts with them rock climbing in Yosemite. It's Bones and Kirk and Spock. And it's the beginning of the time you go, okay, they maybe spend too much time together. They're really trying to force a dynamic on us.
Doesn't Spock show up in the anti-gravity boots?
Yeah. And he saves Shatner, who's free climbing at the age of what I assume is 90. We can't get an age on it. We have to like cut open one of his legs and count the rings. And he falls off the face of the mountain, and Spock catches him with these jet boots, and then they sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat Around a Fire. That is a great stain. A great, great stain.
I haven't seen that one. I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. And that went into theaters. And that was the one that Shatner directed.
Of course it was. That's why he was free climbing.
Yeah.
Oh, is this the one that includes after he makes out with an alien chick, Bones goes, what is it with you? I do remember that it's rare when a movie character says precisely what you're thinking.
That maybe points towards Star Trek. Is that Star Trek VI? I know somebody here is a big fan. Yes. Yes, Six in a Prison. Yeah.
So while we are
country,
yes,
while we are talking about the characters, we talked briefly. Star Wars wins hands down with alien characters,
yes,
and
the all creations. The Star Trek aliens look like they spent different amount of time with their face directly in a fire. So it's just how bad the burns are and what stage of healing they're in. Sorry,
Ferengi were boxing at the same time, so they have.
So let's talk about you mentioned briefly the human characters. I feel I have to also give this one to Star Wars. Because even you just now said that they're really trying to force the relationship of Bones, Spock, and Kirk on us in Star Trek V. I feel like for me, I am more a fan, and maybe it's just a particularly like thing. Like it's just something that I like more. I like Luke and Leia and Han and Chewbacca, and not that he's a human, but he's part of the team. Dang it, humanoid. Thank you. What do you guys think about the characters?
Well, I think that when you're getting to this, there's an important aspect, which is the sense of humor. And Star Trek does not have nearly the sense of humor that the Star Wars universe does. And when I'm referring to Star Wars, I'm referring to both films.
Right.
Well, actually, now all three films.
Oh.
Star Wars taught me narratively.
Hold on a second. Which one are you leaving out of the original trilogy?
Sorry, the trilogy? I ignore the third. I ignore Jedi.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a Jedi.
No kidding.
No, I can't deal with the Ewoks. They freak me out. The hell with that.
That is... Oh, I loved Return of the Jedi. It was
The Ewoks strike me as a line item. Like, fuck it, let's do it this way.
Yeah,
that's all right. Yeah,
and they eat people. They're perfectly willing to eat a human being. They're only scared by religion into not eating the heroes and then fighting with them. Let's remember that.
Right.
The bunch of murder bears in the forest. They come upon that just wind up helping them. That's like a tenuous truce at the end of that movie, at best. They're just happy that they're having, like, Vader barbecue at the very end.
But Han Solo taught me narratively that you, in a movie as sort of ridiculous and silly as a big sci-fi epic, you need someone in the movie who's making fun of the movie.
Yeah.
And Han Solo is absolutely doing that. He's like, can you believe this shit? That's pretty much the translation of everything he says in all the films he's in. And there's nobody making fun of Star Trek. There's no, it is totally in earnest. And I feel like that leans me more towards Star Wars because that's, you need someone.
Well, humor is such a big part of humanity that humorless characters don't seem as human, even though Spock is not human, but.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll say that by and large, there's way less humor in the Star Trek universe, with the exception of The Voyage Home, Star Trek IV, which is basically an ensemble comedy. Where they travel
it's a fish out of water
it's
comedy.
It's the one here in San Francisco.
It's in San Francisco.
Is it time for a vernacular phrase yet, Captain?
Exactly. I mean, it's very funny, but that's more like a peek into what it could have been if they had allowed it to go in that direction a little bit more rather than that being the status quo, which it is more in Star Wars.
And they got some of that in Star Trek. I mean, you had Data's meth-addicted brother, Lore, who was always comic relief.
Sure.
There is one episode, I can't even remember what it is that gets Riker all riled up, and it might be Tasha Yar gets him kind of riled up, and as he's walking away, he's like, I'll be in the holodeck. And you're like, I know exactly what you are doing.
So on Spaceturbation, they're equal.
Yeah.
Maybe better tools in Star Trek.
Right.
All right, so let's talk... Let's talk
fandoms.
It is
hard to beat the holodeck.
It is.
The holodeck is... like, okay, let's talk gadgets. Gadgets and tech. But I guess that's not really fair since one is science fiction and one is fantasy. The tech is very different. We've talked about the ships a little. The holodeck is amazing. But lightsabers are amazing, too.
Right. So if let's say weaponry.
Okay,
lightsabers versus phasers. Set it on stun. Lightsabers just win against everything.
Yeah,
not in terms of a battle. Like I don't, you know,
right?
But lightsabers
cool
as
points.
Cool points.
Yeah,
right.
And the moment I saw them, they changed my life and became a part of who I am.
When you go by a Disney store and you see that build your own lightsaber thing, do you personally think cute?
No, I'm like, I totally wish I could do this without ending up on Instagram from other people's phones. People will be pointing out, like, he's actually drooling. I think.
You just dive in like Scrooge McDuck, swimming in all of the pieces.
I just ordered a new lightsaber.
Did you really?
There's a company called Vader's Vault that makes these really beautiful, super bright ones. And it's like a menu. You can choose all these different things of like the form factor, but what the blades do. And these blades will flash when you hit them. And you can make them any color you want. So you could be a Sith one day or Mace Windu and your purple Vader.
Mace really won. Like, was that a Samuel Jackson thing? Is that what happened? Like, Samuel Jackson was like, I want a purple one.
Yep.
That is... Man, to be able to do that in the Star Wars universe, or are we going to say that those movies were in the Star Wars universe? Are we going to count those?
I think they're accepted as canon by Disney.
They are Hoth Stain, however.
Yes.
They are, yeah.
But no Caravan or Caravan of Courage or Battle for Endor. Those are not part of the canon.
Battle for Endor is great.
Those are two TV movies that three people in the audience know, but one of them is very loud, so it sounds like more of you know.
Right. I know a lot of people hate on the, and I'm going to get yelled at, the prequels, our episodes 1, 2, and 3. Compared to the rest of the Star Wars universe, they are subpar. As movies, I enjoyed them. I enjoyed watching them as movies. Not as a Star Wars fan did I enjoy watching them, but I enjoyed watching them as action movies.
I thought the third one sucked less than the other two.
Booed by one guy in the
movie. I agree. Yeah.
Participation is fun.
I will say that a friend of mine taught me the best way to watch the prequels, which is on the DVD, choose another language
oh, God.
That you don't know and then watch it with subtitles, because all shitty dialogue sounds seems better when you're going through the work to read it.
Ah.
And visually, actually, you can see a genuine progression. Effects folks can see, you can see this, actually. Visually, number one is a mess. It's just like they put everything into every frame. Number two and three feel a lot more like the original Ralph McQuarrie scenic paintings of what the Star Wars universe should look like. There's real balance and a lovely design to every frame. So I think visually, the second and third films are a radical improvement over the first one. And so there's, you know, they learned, and I agree with you. As movies, they're not horrendous. In the Star Wars universe, they're a great disappointment.
A right. great disappointment.
What, now you, what effect do you think the use of practical effects in the new, Star Wars had on it being superior to the digital effects?
I think for me watching it, and this is, we've agreed to avoid spoilers for whoever is listening to this somewhere on the planet who has not seen one of the highest grossing films in the history of people.
And also, but still chose to listen to a podcast.
Still chose to listen to a podcast.
About Star Wars versus Star Trek.
I almost feel like punishing them by just reciting the entire plot, but I won't. I think the practical effects help, at least having some practical effects bring you closer to the film, so you're more connected to it.
And the actors prefer it. That's a straight up, you know, Ian McKellen got real tired of acting against blue non-dwarves in the Hobbit films. And I know from working at ILM that Ewan McGregor at several points lost his temper with lightsabering against things that weren't there and just in blue rooms all day long. That's hard. It's a lot to ask of the actors. And that veracity shows up that they're sitting in the Millennium Falcon and BB-8 is actually rolling around. You can't replace what the actors are getting from that environment.
Yeah, I agree.
I did not know that BB-8 was practical until 2 days ago. That blew my mind.
Do you live in a bunker?
Yeah.
This information is available. I know you go.
You guys,
internet.
There's an internet, apparently. Hal knows how to use it. He just puts a microphone in my face.
So if Rule 34 of the internet is true, and just for those who don't know, Rule 34 is that if it exists, there is pornography of it.
There is pornography of the internet itself?
Rule 34 of the internet is if it exists, there is pornography of it. If something exists, there is pornography of that.
Okay.
Yep.
Rule 35 is that searching for Rule 34 will get you fired. But this means that there must be BB-8 porn out there already.
Oh, as soon as the teaser hit, I guarantee you some fan fiction website went down from the number of submissions that they got.
I want a blanket that holds me down and the BB-8 to roll all over me.
You could make that yourself. Just get that new BB-8 that came out.
It's like a massage, right?
Is now a good time? Okay,
sure.
So we have a bit of a surprise for you and a surprise for everyone here. Cause I would like to move on to talking about, culture and the cultural implications of these movies. About a month and a half ago when we had decided that this was going to be our topic, I was having breakfast with a friend of mine and I mentioned that this was going to be the topic. And for the rest of our breakfast, it is all he wanted to talk about was the cultural implications of these movies. And at that point, I said, will you please come and surprise us as a guest in our episode and talk about this cultural implications of Star Wars and Star Trek? And he said he would love to do it. We are very happy to have a surprise guest to join us on our panel. We have a chair for him and a microphone for him. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John Hodgman.
So I'm
waiting for you to just, like, you were a bent hose back there and it suddenly opened up.
Well, I was the one booing you.
Oh. Oh, good.
Because my feeling is, you know, the prequel movies, I have a list of things. First of all, unfortunately, I'm not a surprise to Adam. I was going to be a surprise to Adam, but he caught me ordering French fries, which were delicious.
Thank you for playing along that it was a surprise.
Yeah. No, I didn't realize he was coming up on stage. I thought he was just coming out to see his friends.
I was about to storm the stage, even if I wasn't asked. Gagliardi said, As movies, they're pretty good. What are you talking about?
I have a tendency.
I mean, they are. I mean, they are an example of getting what you wished for, and being sad about it. Because you know, everyone wanted to see the Jedi in their prime. It's like, no, you didn't. You missed what you liked about the movies altogether. Because the movies, the original trilogy, that's a beat up world that has a history. You don't want to see that history. Once you see that world all nice and shining clean, it's a different world. But those movies. George Lucas got everything he wanted as well. And
this, sure, they made Darth Tater.
Another classic example of. Don't watch what you wish for. Don't get everything you want because it's a dumb, boring movie. Do you know what I mean?
No, I
didn't. The Phantom Menace is one of the most poorly structured films of all time.
Agreed.
It is absolutely indecipherable as a plot, and it is boring, and you don't connect with any of the characters, and you don't know what any of them want.
I will say, look, I will agree with you about The Phantom Menace. But there's something that I love about episode three, and just watching the final battle scene I enjoyed, and I have a tendency to love watching actors chew scenery, and watching Palpatine just gobble up every bit of scenery in that movie is a blast.
I thought what Adam Savage said about turning off the sound and just watching the visuals with subtitles is a fascinating idea. There's much to love in the films. There's so much. Incredible craftspersonship in those movies in terms of the cinematography, the design, the special effects, and everything else. It's there, and there are moments that are really enjoyable and fun too. And it's fun to watch it and go, "Here's everything that's wrong with that," which is one of my favorite things about culture. I prefer flawed things to perfect things. So in that regard, yes. But if you think that's a good movie, boo.
Well, maybe we should talk
because
about
then you're not then you don't know what a good movie is, and I thought I knew you.
Just got real.
Yeah.
What? Second point. Second point.
Several drinks.
Do you need some lube,
Gary? Gary Coleman did not play Lumpy, but it never occurred to me until I heard you guys talking about it. Someone did. And I wondered who did. And I took out my phone to look, but the gentleman asked me very nicely, put your phone away, which I absolutely respect, and you're absolutely right. But I don't know, and it remains a mystery, even 10 minutes later to me, which is such a rare thing in the day of the internet. But it's still, and it's a mystery that haunts me, because somewhere in the world, there is probably still living a man or a woman who played Chewbacca's child. And they're walking around with this knowledge every day.
But somewhat and secretly, because you couldn't really
when
see.
When that person goes out on a date, they have to choose whether or not they're going to reveal it.
At what point in the relationship do I have to lay this out on the table?
I was Lumpy.
Yeah. All I imagine is getting cast. You're in the Star Wars holiday special.
Right.
And you're playing Chewbacca's son. And this is going to be, this is my golden ticket. I'm going to work forever.
Yeah.
I'll be able to do the convention circuit didn't really exist then, but you will never find any of the actors who played Chewbacca's family at any convention anywhere signing
anything.
But
they're visually obscene.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. With the underbite on his dad. Yes. Like that crazy, crazy jaw they put on him.
They looked like illustrations from a medical journal that you like slam back shut.
Yeah. Back when phrenology was a thing.
Well, they're all deformed.
Let's
and then point three is, and Mark, you alluded to this. I don't even know why we're having this dumb discussion because they're not comparable in any way.
This is the thing I was about. When you talk culturally, Star Wars is an aesthetic. Mythical journey. And so I think of Star Wars as satisfying me on an aesthetic level and on a narrative level about the epic hero's journey. I think of Star Trek as social commentary.
Yeah, exactly so. One of them is a science fiction movie, and it is not Star Wars. Because Star Wars is a fantasy film. It is takes place a long time ago, and it is entirely, in different ways, Star Trek pretends to be concerned with science. They come up with fictional science. Star Wars doesn't care about science at all. You know, there is no science in that fiction. There is only mystical moving things with your mind and wizards.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you the primary driver for settling this. One is it was suggested. Two is that when it got suggested, a lot of people dug in one way or the other.
Right.
But the third is, especially when, Adam, when you tweeted you were doing the show, the response from a ton of people who do not get it was like, you can't decide. They're the same thing. To which I go, oh, I'll show you.
We can decide anything.
Yeah.
This we'll show can you. Take that
That's
challenge.
No, it's point. Not that they're the same thing. It's that they're profoundly different
yes,
things with
and,
different missions.
And, yes.
And Star Trek Absolutely. Has a very specific tradition in the a very specific mission in the science fiction tradition of providing social commentary and speculation as to how things might get worse or better in the future if you take things to certain logical conclusions. Whereas Star Wars is profoundly is a piece of nostalgia. The whole thing is, and this is why you don't want to see the prequels. You never want to see the prequels because the whole movie is premised on things were better in the past. Things were better before the Empire here. And if we work hard enough and we fight the right war, we can make America great again. And it wasn't until I was talking with you that morning, Mark, that I realized that in fact Star Wars has a profoundly toxic cultural influence, because nostalgia is the fuel of every terrorist movement on Earth. It's also the fuel, I would say, without Star Wars, Ronald Reagan never would have been elected.
That was the sentence that made me ask you to come do this.
Well, it set the stage culturally for basically, you know, all of the major culture movies and other culture coming out in the 70s was profoundly ambiguous, skeptical, cynical, certainly not trusting of power.
And there had been movies that used aesthetics similar to Star Wars before that. There are precursors to the universal
sure.
look
right.
of Star Wars.
Right. Well, I mean, are we going to talk about Silent Running or what?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no one knows that movie, that weird ecology space movie with Bruce Dern and who kills his friends
it's
to
like
save
the conversation him. as a science fiction
yeah,
film,
exactly.
right?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, there are robots in that film that are considered to be the precursor to R2-D2, and it was John Dykstra who directed that movie, yeah. right? And it came out before Star Wars, right?
And actually, it seems to me quite interesting that Dykstra then took what he learned on Star Wars and went and made the first big television excursion into science fiction, which was Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Which then comes back around to being one of the greatest shows ever made for television, the Battlestar Galactica well, reboot.
Talk about the hero's journey. No one saw that happening.
But at that point, the BSG reboot belongs much more in the Star Trek category
yes.
because it's total class and social commentary.
It's absolutely. It's much more science fiction than Star Wars
yeah.
ever was. And the fact is that what Star Wars did was, obviously it changed sort of how movies were made and perceived in the culture. That was the first, you know, along with Jaws, kind of the first big blockbuster event movie and everything else. But in a larger culture, it reintroduced narratives where there is a very clear good side, a very clear bad side. And there was, and the way that you defeated it was completely religious. It had nothing to do, with bettering yourself. Or getting an education, or, you know what I mean?
There was never a moment when they were like, we need to sit down at the table across from the Empire
no.
and the rebels.
You need
and...
to get in touch with a magical power we all have inside of ourselves, and then suddenly you will be able to kill the evil Empire. And that's basically the foundation of Donald Trump's campaign, right?
And in the new movie, Princess Leia is Dick Cheney. She is the
yeah.
She is the neoconservative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what they can't say in the new movie, but it's clear, is that the Empire. Well, not, we weren't going to talk about that. This isn't a spoiler, but it's basically the First Order is ISIS.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's what's happening. Right.
Right. Right.
And
yes.
and no one appreciates the mainstream government doesn't appreciate the threat, but a bunch of former. Rebels, right?
Sure.
Princess Leia is the only one who gets it, and she's going to organize her own militia. It's basically and basically occupy a wildlife refuge in Oregon.
Yeah.
It's profoundly conservative, neocon conservative. I mean, in the Golan Globus days, it would have been what's his name? Roundhouse Kick. You know,
Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris. Like, you
but
guys
I will. I want his name to now just be Roundhouse Kick. Last name Kick, first name Roundhouse. Right.
And weirdly, I thought you said Ram Dass Kid.
Ram Dass Kid. That's Roundhouse Kick's archenemy. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the 80s, this movie could have been, a movie like this could have been made with Chuck Norris leading his own vigilante band of, you know, special ops because the government won't let him go and assassinate the leader that he wants to in the other. It's really, you know, it's rough. Star Wars world, you know, it gave us Star Wars. It became a metaphor for this boondoggle missile defense program. It gave us the evil empire, which became a metaphor for the Soviet Union, which is, you know, collapsed on its own. We didn't need to destroy its Death Star. And the rebels murdered tens of thousands of stormtroopers.
Which it turns out weren't
fair, the empire destroyed a planet. So, yeah, you know, yeah. I guess they had it coming. But, you know, I really feel, and it wasn't until we were talking that it's like this, it set the stage for the conservative revolution of the 80s that we are still dealing with the aftermath of now.
That is really harshing the mellow.
I know, right?
Yeah. I'm really, yeah.
So,
wait, does this...
Okay, so culturally, Star Trek wins.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know about that either. I mean, I think that...
It's very ideological. It's an ideological idea that all of these different planets have come together.
It's specifically a leftist ideology.
Yes, you very leftist.
Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek. Yeah.
Except the leftist ideology that they abandoned constantly. Right. The prime directive is we can't f*** with the planet. Let's f*** with these people right now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's f*** with them. Let's f*** them. Let's do everything we can.
I mean,
it was just several spaceships full of people going rogue.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, I tend to find it to be, I mean, it's optimistic, even utopian, in terms of its vision of a future that will eventually be tolerant of, you know, there's still some holdouts, but a future of tolerance for all different races, creeds, and religions. And it's wonderful, but I always found the original series to be profoundly dry for that reason. Like, I couldn't get into it as a kid because kids want to have these laser penises and fight each other. Do you know what I mean?
Like, the laser penises aren't the only thing. You can also get BB-8 to roll all over your body while you lay on the thing.
That's right.
I don't think wanting a laser penis and wanting to fight is strictly in the domain of a child.
Well, no.
In fact, that set off the Reagan presidency in 1980.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Star Wars is childish. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And the reason we love it and the reason this new movie was so affecting is that it really puts you back into a feeling that you had when you were a child that the prequels did not do at all. And it was a mix of the practical effects and the spirit of it. And you know, and so, but again, it's culture of nostalgia, which can be lovely, but also can be dangerous because nostalgia is a myth. Nostalgia, the suggestion that things were better once, and are terrible now, but they can get better again, is wrong on all three points.
One of my favorite things
in real life and in the galaxy.
Agreed, yeah. Agreed. One of my favorite things that I came across in the last year was they found some letter in Pompeii, some bit of writing from someone complaining about this generation of kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah. And I like bring this up with my wife when we're literally complaining about this generation of kids. And I'm like, yeah, it turns out that's a human thing that we've been doing for millennia.
Yeah, we hate kids. Because they remind us that we're dying.
Yes. Great. Thanks, John. Let's talk about merchandise.
But, you know, the last thing I'll say on this is, and it just, you know, so the prequels were a misstep from the very, very beginning. They never should have been made because, truthfully, there are two problems with it. One, Lucas could do anything he wanted, and he had no strong producer who would say, no, you need to draft out this story better. You need to, you know, consolidate this. No Jar Jar Binks. No one said no to him. And at the same time, paradoxically, he had his hands tied. Because to tell that story, he had to essentially invalidate the premise of Star Wars and show that things weren't better before, that the government was corrupt and failing, that there were Jedi's who were Count Dooku-ing it up all the time and betraying their order. It basically was just a reminder, like, no, it wasn't particularly good then either, and it's now it's boring. to boot. All right. So,
as when you talk
now
about
my fourth point,
when you talk about when you talk about merchandising, I want to go towards the costumes. Because
right.
I will say in this, Star Wars wins hands down. And Star Trek...
It's a uniform. There's just, comparing.
No, there is no comparing. And I recently, when I completed building the captain's chair, we did a piece on the website about it. And I went out and found the best replica of Kirk's captain's tunic.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you buy it correctly, and I did, makes you look just as kind of doughy as the original effect on
what is it made of, like wetsuit material?
Yeah,
so it's a
like
little too
kind
thick?
Of, yeah, it's a little too tight and a little too high, so in order to, you kind of have to do this, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's perfect, but it's not like kids want to go running around dressed in those Star Trek uniforms. There's no aspiration of the gadgets and the props from Star Trek. I love tricorders and phasers
sure.
and stuff
yeah.
like that. But
for those of us who grew up in the 70s, wearing a clingy polyester tunic was our everyday wear. Anyway.
America was soon to relegate that to Europe, but
I mean, costume wise, it's way easier. I remember as a kid wanting to.
I grew up in a part of Europe called Brookline, Massachusetts.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be Han Solo. That was my favorite character. So I would wear a white turtleneck and put a vest over it. Guess what? I'm Han Solo now.
Yeah.
That's what he wore in the movie. Pants, a vest, and a white shirt.
Yep.
I didn't have to go get like the pajama set they wore in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
I did have the Underoos Han Solo set, though, that was it was more less of a costume and more just a picture of Han Solo and then more pictures of Han Solo. And I wore those everywhere, and that was how I got toilet trained. Was my mom said, if you use the potty, you can get your Han Solo Underoos. I have revealed too much on this podcast.
You've got to pull Han's face aside in order to use the...
I shot first. Terrible.
Yeah. Podcast high five.
So, in terms of toys... I don't think
I guess
had,
I guess like
yeah,
I guess
stop. What are you even talking
you can't,
about?
All right. let me expand.
What favorite Star Trek toy did you have?
I had a pewter model of
stop
the
right
Enterprise.
There that is not
there
a toy.
Was a transporter that you could spin and
I had
your
that.
Figure would disappear. I never had that. Oh. I so wanted it.
I was an only child.
Did any of you guys have the
and I can tell you I played with them all and that Star Trek playset. It was those big Mego.
Yeah, with the 12-inch, 1/6 scale.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And they, it was terrible.
Really?
Totally terrible.
Did any of you guys have the Christmas tree ornament? Did you have the Christmas tree ornament? There was an ornament that came out. It was a transporter, and you would press it, and it was Leonard Nimoy's voice, and it would go, it would say, Spock here, happy holidays, live long and prosper. And it was, I would press it all day as a child, just sit there by the Christmas tree pressing this thing.
Now, can I just say that Leonard Nimoy is one of the greatest humans who ever lived?
Yeah,
and
you can.
And even though I found the original series to be dry and really came only into it during the Next Generation, but the amount of that cast was profoundly talented.
Absolutely.
And great. And, you know, William Shatner included, even.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's broaden out from just merchandise, which Star Wars wins hands down, to fandom in general, which I think Star Trek, I mean, there weren't really, like, Star Trek sort of set the tone for fandoms
yes.
of everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
was that sounded like the Family Feud buzzer.
It did. 100 people
But we got two more.
Yeah.
We got two more until it throws to the other family.
For those listening... Someone in the front row let out a very cynical.
I will
or no,
tell you,
suspicious. I don't know words anymore. Sunday. What's the word I'm looking for?
22 years. I moved here to San Francisco 25 years ago. Yeah, it was just 25 years ago, and there was a Star Trek convention at the, which is the huge atrium that's like 50 stories tall, the Marriott down here downtown in San
don't
Francisco.
Look at me. I don't live here.
Hyatt. They had a Star Trek convention at the Hyatt, and the Hyatt already looks like a Star Trek set.
Yeah.
And my buddy and I went, And we're in this hotel that looks like a Star Trek set populated with people in Star Trek uniform. And I was like, this is cool. This is fandom done on a deep and wonderful level. That's 25 years ago. That's pretty significant.
Well, and I think that so this may elicit another skeptical. Yeah. But there's no question that Star Trek fan clubs and conventions and cosplay long before Star Wars
decades,
ever came out.
Yeah.
And that may be because there was no merchandise for it. So the merchandise was what you made for yourself and the games you played in the imaginary world.
Why do you think that fandom grew so exponentially larger than the Star Wars fandom?
People want to live in the Star Trek universe with their friends because it suggests a world where outsiders are allowed in. You know, it's a tolerant world. And I remember the thing that really got me. I mean, it's for all of its sort of leftist ideas, it's a regimented world. There's a clear chain of command. Everyone respects each other in an almost militaristic way. Yeah. They stay out of each other's way. They all have their jobs to do. They do them well. They respect each other. And I remember that to me was the pornography of Star Trek. When I was
comrade porn,
comrade, like everyone had their own clean room.
Oh my God, I love this so much.
They could go to their cafeteria anytime they wanted. They could play a little game of chess in three level chess in the rec room and strum a weird lyre or whatever. And there was camaraderie, there was esprit de corps, and it was a profoundly tolerant universe, and I loved it. And especially once you got into the Next Generation, because I loved the late 80s, early 90s wood paneling on the bridge. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
You know, like the side of a Dodge Caravan.
Yeah. It looks like there should be some ferns in the corners, and they're serving Bloody Marys as well.
And they were unflappable. How much time do we have? 6 minutes. Let's meet in my ready room.
Yeah. And like for me, the disappointment of the show every week after week was that something happened. Like
you just wanted to watch a procedural that was nothing but daily procedures.
I was like, can't we just have one where it's a routine mission? Like,
well, we got it. Let's head back. Cool.
But
the bowls in the mission is
like, oh, because it's like, oh, everyone just got their job done and there's no tension at all. So, and that, it was during I was in college and there was a lot of anxiety in my life.
We could get this Star Trek fan reboot to make a Hodgman episode.
Routine mission.
A routine mission.
Yeah.
The red shirts all come back.
Yeah.
I love gets space syphilis.
So it's a it's a fun. I think a calming universe to be in, and conventions specifically were places where, people who didn't have their own people in their hometowns because they were weirdos or nerds or whatever could go and find their people in the lobby of a hotel, and they shared the same thing, and they would be tolerated there and enjoyed there, and they could be themselves there. No. And that was the world that they were trying to replicate. Star Wars, you don't want to replicate the world because it's all about one singular personal journey inward.
However, I do want to point out that within Star Wars fandom, we need to address the wonderful 501st Division.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
Now, yeah.
If you've seen, I've seen them in San Diego, and they are unbelievable.
They're amazing. If you don't know about this, this is a group of people who dress up mostly as stormtroopers, but the 501st will dress as any character from the Empire. There are Vaders, Boba Fetts, Red Guards.
Technically, Boba Fett wasn't a part of the Empire. He was a freelance mercenary.
You go back to your clean cafeteria.
Stipulated. But here's the thing. The 501st spends most of their time doing fundraising and outreach. They go to hospitals. They visit kids in the hospital. We've had them on Mythbusters several times. They refuse to take money for what they do. They ask you to donate to their charities. I mean,
they're sending stormtroopers to children's hospitals.
This is what I love. No, I know. The cognitive dissonance is hilarious.
I know, but it just feels like it's the Empire's propaganda arm.
There is also a Rebel Legion where you can dress as anybody in the rebellion as well. I got inducted into the 501st and I was stupidly dressed as a Chewbacca, so I guess I'm an evil Chewbacca. I'm a turncoat Chewbacca.
There are also droid builder clubs. If you haven't seen this, they make like R2D2 and R4D4 and whatever.
I was among the original members of the R2D2 builders club.
There you go.
In the late 90s.
Isn't it interesting?
Thank you for your work.
How few robots there are in the Star Trek universe.
I have a hard time thinking of.
Yeah.
What's that?
I mean, a schwa. There's a schwa at the.
Robots were obviously a staple of science fiction for generations before Star Trek came along, but it wasn't until Data that there was a robot in the cast and featured. I can't think of another robot. I'll say it the right way now. Robot. in Star Trek, besides Data.
Do you think it's because, I mean...
Whereas, you know, obviously Star Wars is full of them.
No.
Could it be a practical thing? Like, maybe the same reason that the aliens are better in Star Wars and Star Trek is that one was on TV and they were doing it every week and the budgets were lower. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's really expensive to put some white pancake makeup on Brent Spiner.
We also had B9. We had B9 from Lost in Space. That's a perfect robot.
That was made of... HVAC.
Well, wasn't Gene Roddenberry interested in robots?
The Enterprise is sort of a giant robot. It speaks to you. You can talk to it. The ship's computer.
I have one job on this ship.
The greatest Star Trek movie of all time. Galaxy Quest.
Even in their name, Star Trek, it's a voyage forward. And Star War, it's not Star War. It's perpetual war. War after war after war. Star Wars.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, that was another thing we had talked about. If you Star Trek, Star Wars, you can reduce it down to just, which do you prefer, a trek or a war?
Yeah.
Well, on that, I'm going to go with the trek, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's clear that people want to say trek, and some people truly feel that. But people want to... say Trek, but a lot of people love Wars.
Yep. Sure.
We have one person who loves Wars in the front row. The same person who went, a few minutes ago.
Even though I feel that Star Trek has better virtues, it's also, I think, more boring because it's so virtuous. And Star Wars, even though I think it allowed Ronald Reagan to become president... and maybe Donald Trump, too, soon.
That's Chancellor Trump.
Chancellor Trump, yeah.
Supreme Leader Trump.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I am going to say right now it is a more complicated piece of art and therefore a better piece of art.
Star Wars.
If I were to compare.
Hodgman's far more intelligent than I am, and I'm going to go with him. I agree that it is messy. That's what I love about the two things, one missing. When I was doing detailing on the outside of a Star Wars ship, I'm telling a story about how that ship got put together, and I'm also telling a story that I've been wanting to participate in since I was 9 years old, which is what everybody who's watching that movie and excited about how lived in those ships did. And that is actually George Lucas's particular brilliance with Star Wars, was that everything was really beat to crap. And I know Silent Running, they pay a huge debt to Silent Running and also to 2001 and some other films. But Star Wars is the one that codified that the messy universe that feels genuine.
I'm really depressed by how few people in this room made any noise about Silent Running. No one's seen this movie, right? Douglas Trumbull, I got it wrong. Thanks very much. Another special effects maestro, and that was one of the few films he directed. Sorry.
Thanks, Wave.
So, Mark, what do you say?
As a fan, for me, it is, and I feel like, I guess I'm a terrible, I'm now want to make America great again. I'm going to get my red hat because I also am going to say Star Wars.
People of the world, people of the galaxy, people of the universe. Go ahead and enjoy Spock all you want. Great guy. Love him. Captain Kirk, cool dude. But all the action's happening in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. You can watch Star Trek. You can enjoy Star Trek. Dress up in your outfits and be on the Whitewater jury like that one woman from Trekkies.
Oh,
totally fine.
I love her.
However... only one universe can be the best universe, and that universe is the Star Wars universe. And contingent upon this decision, everybody is now forced to watch the Star Wars Holiday Special once a year. In English, no subtitles. You have to take your medicine, and you'll feel much better for it. So I don't want to hear any more of this from all of you nerds and geeks out there arguing with one another. This has been decided. Good night. Energize. Wrong one.
May the force be with you.
Punch it, Chewie.
Punch it, Chewie.
Punch it.
So this topic is settled. There are many other topics, and we love to hear from our listeners. Please reach out to us on Twitter at We Got This Tweets, or look for us on Reddit in the Maximum Fun subreddit. You will find people arguing about all this stuff.
Yes, go to facebook.com/WeGotThisPodcast or email us at WeGotThisPodcast.com.
Tell us your favorite religion.
Yes, tell favorite religion, race, all of it. Politics, we can't wait. That'll
As
be the next
always, we would like to thank Mike Furman and Jonathan Dinerstein for our theme song and score, respectively.
Thanks,
guys. Thank you to producer Ken Plume, to researcher Kate McManus, and to graphic designer Uri Kilman.
And, of course, as always, thank you to you. I can actually look at people when I say this part now, which is makes me very happy. Thank you to you.
Do you want to get into your underwear?
Yes, I do. It's my Han Solo underoos. Thank you for listening to the show. We have so much fun doing it. We have so much fun hearing from you.
I don't want it to be over.
Okay. We just said we have lots more topics. Oh, you mean this particular episode?
Yeah.
We can just go to the bar and keep talking about this.
Okay. Okay, good. Yes, we can.
For Hal Lublin, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
For Mark Gagliardi, I'm Hal Lublin. And wait, before we say it, thank you to Adam Savage, special guest.
Thank you.
Thank you to John Hodgman, special surprise guest.
Hooray for me.
And
you know what? Let me do this then.
Do it.
For Adam Savage, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
And for John Hodgman, I'm Hal Lublin.
And don't worry, everybody.
We got this.
Yeah!
Thank you again, everybody. And thank you to our special guests.
Thank you.
I'm not leaving. Let's talk about more things.
We got this.
Ty is a pedantic person. I think when he pronounces these words, it's in a very show-off-y way. Gyro.
Yiro.
Sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu.
Ayers Rock.
Uluru.
What you are witnessing is real. The participants are not actors. They are actual litigants with real cases. They call in via Skype to Judge John Hodgman's court, the real people's court. Now I call you to Judge John Hodgman's internet court. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Let's be honest. We live in a world with too much media. You need a podcast on the front lines figuring out what's great.
We're here for you. We're Pop Rocket.
I am Guy Branum. I'm a comedian.
I'm Winter Mitchell. I call myself a digital strategist.
I'm Oliver Wang, academic and disc junkie.
Margaret Wappler, je suis es journaliste.
And we watch, listen to, and read everything so that you don't have to. And then we tell you about all the things that you'll love to love.
Find us in iTunes or wherever you download podcasts.
Pop Rocket, every Wednesday from MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.